Hi, I'm Kelly.
Hi.
And my husband just walked in, and my sponsor, so I have to be really honest. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. Oh. I usually don't cry, but I'm... Geez, my heart is really heavy today. I have a... I just got back from a funeral. For my sponsor, who's also one of my best friends, sister, and I also sponsor her little sister, who lost her life on May 18th to the disease of addiction. She overdosed on heroin and left behind three beautiful children and a lot of people who love her very much. I feel so blessed that I was able to know Melissa and be a part of her life because she touched the lives of so many people. And when she walked into the room, she lit the room up with her energy. She had a beautiful spirit, a beautiful heart, and she cared about many people. And it wasn't her time. And unfortunately, that's what happens. And I'm so grateful to God that there's somewhere I can go for a solution, somewhere that I can go to find hope through hearing other people's experience and getting the strength that I get from them, to be able to keep going because sometimes it feels unbearable. I wanted to read something that was on the back of the program for her funeral. It's called The Starfish Story. It says, an old man was walking on the beach one morning after a storm. In the distance, he could see someone moving like a dancer. As he came closer, he saw that it was a young woman picking up starfish and gently throwing them into the ocean. Young lady, why are you throwing starfish into the ocean? The sun is up and the tide is going out. And if I don't throw them in, they will die, she said. But young lady, do you not realize that there are many miles of beach and thousands of starfish? You cannot possibly make a difference. The young woman listened politely, then bent down, picked up another starfish, and threw it into the sea. It made a difference for that one. That's my sponsor. Her sharing her experience, strength, and hope with me when I first came to these rooms, to this program, she made a difference just for me. And I know she's made a difference for a lot of other people in her life, but especially in my life. I'm so grateful that I walked into the rooms of Kohanon almost 7 years ago. I came in because my childhood, I was, my father was an alcoholic and he drank every day from a very young age. And, I come from a family of, there's six children. I'm in the middle. There's three older, and then I'm the oldest of the second half. I like to say my mom's second litter. there's a good gap in between us. And growing up, I lived with a father who was an alcoholic and who, when he would drink, darkness overcame him, and he would abuse my mother. And I was the kid who would jump in the middle of them to try to stop him and get pushed away and pushed across the room, and I'd keep getting up. And from a young age, I learned how to become a fighter, but I also learned how to put a wall up. And growing up in school, I would, I would put a show on. I'd be an actress. I'd go to school and I'd act like everything was okay at home. And I didn't want you to know what was going on at home, because if you knew that my father was an alcoholic, if you knew those things about me, you wouldn't accept me. And your parents for sure would not ever let you come over and play at my house. So from a young age, I learned to hide it. And I remember my mom coming into the room when I was little, and I don't have many memories. I blocked a lot of them because they were pretty traumatic, but I do have a few where, my mom, there'd be so much violence going on, and we would be in our bedrooms crying as we'd hear the fighting happening. And my mom would come in and she would say, it's okay, he's just drinking, it's okay. So from a young age, I learned it was okay, he's just drinking, you know? And, but inside I knew it wasn't okay. And so it was really hard. as a child to try to understand that, but it my dad's alcoholism progressively got worse, and at 10 years old, my parents divorced, and my mom, who is not an alcoholic, but she's severely codependent, she found another one, and that would be my life for the next 17 years. And, you know, my father was in and out of my life from the age of 10 to 16, and, you know, I'd go visit him, and it was, most of the time he'd be drinking, and there were times that he'd be using, and, you know, there was a lot of fighting and a lot of dysfunction, and he would use drugs. And I remember one time we were at an apartment of one of his girlfriends, and he had us go in her closet and stay in there so he could get loaded. And I remember thinking, this is a really big closet. And I wasn't, you know, looking back, I'm like, he put us in a closet, you know? But as a kid, we were like, cool, we're going to make a fort, and you know what I mean? And you know, I didn't realize it until I was an adult, but that was God. That was God protecting us. You know, we were in this room and we were safe. And, you know, a lot of things happened, and we saw a lot of things, and we experienced, my brother and sister and I experienced, the pain of what alcoholism does on a family. And, you know, my dad would eventually, be gone for the next 4 years, at 16, and I couldn't find him for another four. And my mom would continue to date alcoholics, and they were abusive, and I'd get in the middle of them, and I would fight them off her, and it was just this cycle of dysfunction. And at the age of 17, I had missed so much school from staying home with my little brother and sister because she worked three jobs, that I decided she was going to move again, and we had already moved. By 17, I had already moved 10 times from 10 years old to 17, and I didn't want to move again. It was my junior year, and I moved in with my aunt, and I had the credits of a freshman. And I went to a school where they had a program where I could graduate on time. So I went there, and I ended up going to school from 7 in the morning to 7 at night my junior year. And I worked my butt off, and I did some classes that I could take home as well, and I ended up graduating my junior year of high school when I should have been about 3 years behind. I needed to get out of the house. I wanted to get away, and I had an aunt who was kind enough to let me live with her. And, you know, from then on, my life would slowly spiral from there. You know, I was 21, I met my husband, who was, I didn't know at the time that he was an addict, but he knew. I guess, looking back, I guess he knew. And, you know, he used a lot, and our life would be pretty hard after that. There were many nights for the next few years that I would stay up late watching my husband overdose. And I didn't know that he was overdosing. I just knew that he would stop breathing, and I'd sit there and rub his chest and wait for him to wake up and come to. And there were many trips that I remember going driving on that I remember him nodding off and falling asleep at the wheel and being so scared that, like, if he didn't wake up, that we were going to go off the edge. And us fighting. And my kids at the time, we had my youngest daughter, who was actually his, but I started raising when she was 1 and a half. We had her, and from that point on, just life started getting really bad. And I remember, you know, just feeling lost. Our family was broken. We had another daughter, and the disease of addiction filled our, it was just, our house was completely a wreck. And everything that I didn't want my children to have, they had. And I promised I'd never give my kids that life. And here I was, and I didn't know how to stop. And I'm so, how to stop the dysfunction. And I'm so grateful that, by the time it got bad enough, CPS was wanting to step in and take the kids out of my home. And my husband, we went up to Payson because my mother-in-law, we had found out she was wanting to come take the kids, so we took off to Payson to hide from her. And my husband was given an obituary of a guy who, his name was Ezekiel Sweeney, and he had died from an overdose, and he had two girls the same age as our daughters. And whatever it was that weekend, my husband was able to have enough clarity to where he came back home, and he checked himself into treatment about a week later. And that would start our journey of our life finally getting back together, finally things, the brokenness being mended. My husband was a beautiful person when I met him, but I watched what this disease did to him, and I watched it take this man who was big and strong. And when my husband got sober, he was 160 pounds. He's about, 230 now? He's a big guy. He was 160 pounds. He was close to death. My kids were watching on a daily basis, experiencing the brokenness in our home. And I got to watch my husband get sober. And it was because someone came into the detox and they shared their 12 steps with him. They shared the steps and they showed him that there's a way to do the deal and to use tools to be able to let go of everything and connect to a higher power. And I don't remember the man who came in that day, but that man that came in to his detox saved our family. We wouldn't be here today without him. He carried a message of hope, and he shared his experience. And it just hit something happened. God was able to intervene, and my husband's heart and his soul was able to open up long enough to hear this message. And he began leading that path for our whole family. I got to see the light in my kids' eyes just open. I got to watch them get to have their dad back. And it's hard. It's hard watching those around you that you love, like the kids that are affected, the family members that are affected, and I got to watch my family slowly come back together. And I got to watch my husband be restored into this man that God intended him to be. My husband, next month, July 15, will be celebrating 7 years of sobriety. And, the last 7 years of our life have been amazing. And I know when I came into these rooms 7 years ago, I was pretty broken. I didn't like my husband. I didn't want to be with him anymore. I was done with him. He had turned into my father. I had, picked a man that was just like my father. And I thought that it was over, and God had different plans for our family for sure. Because when I came into these rooms, there were women in here that shared their experience, strength, and hope. There was Jessica, who reached her hand out, and even if she was going to make a difference in just one life, she did that. She shared her experience with me. And, there's so many women in this room. But the last 7 years, these rooms have taught me how to be a mother, how to show up as a wife, how to just be a person that gives rather than takes, When I came in, I was pretty broken. I was angry with my father. I was resentful. I didn't understand. When I came into the rooms, I thought that they were gonna give me a solution on how to deal with him and him. my husband, my father, and I come from a family of a lot of addicts, uncles, aunts, cousins, you name it. They're all around me. And I thought I was gonna get a solution on how to fix them, because I didn't need fixed for sure. They were broken. And what I didn't realize when I came in was that this program was not, it was a solution for me. I didn't realize how sick I was when I came in here. But I knew that I was angry. I knew that I didn't want anything really to do with my father. But I knew that I, as a daughter, I was supposed to love him and not completely detach from him. That I still needed to have him in my life because he's my dad, But I came in here very angry, very broken, and I didn't know that what I was going to receive would be a lot more than I had expected. I had my sponsor take me through the steps, And basically, if you don't know what the steps are, they're just a way to get you to be willing to turn your life over to a higher power and to God. And I did not understand God. I was angry with God. What kind of God would let my father abuse my mom on a daily basis? What kind of God would allow these things to happen? And what I didn't realize is it wasn't God that was doing those things. It was the addiction, the disease, you know? And I came in here and I did my steps, and I was, you know, they just said you had to be willing to believe. And I was willing to believe. I knew that I believed in God, but I was so angry. And they just told me just be willing to believe. And so I was, and I went through, and they said you get to write out your resentments. And that was like, yes, I have been so wronged by so many. And this was my time, you know. Yes. And so I got to write down all the things that were that I was angry at, and all the wrongs my dad had ever done, and all the wrongs my aunts and my uncles and my cousins and all those, especially my husband, no, all the things that, you know, they had all done to wrong me. And then, you know, I got to share those things with my sponsor, and I got to share those things that I never wanted to share with anyone. I didn't want you to know that I went through that kind of childhood, because then you wouldn't accept me, because I thought I was alone, you know, and I thought I needed to have this perfect family and all these things to be okay. And I was able to share these things with my sponsor, and I was able to share with her the hurts and pains that I experienced, and the brokenness that was in my family, and the pain that my father caused, and the pain of having a mother who was so codependent on men that I felt like I lost my mother too. Because when I came to these rooms, I not only did not have a father in my life, but I also had a mother who was very much not an addict, but very much sick. I want to say that she's almost been affected more by this disease than my family and friends that are actual addicts, because she is so sick that I've lost the relationship with her. She's not able to show up as a mom. She's just not. And I'm grateful that I had a sponsor who's not been just a sister, not just a mom, a best friend. She's been everything to me. There's been women in here who when they share, I relate to, and who I've been able to lean on and get close to. I think one of the hardest things for me was my mom, was coming to a place of acceptance that that I wasn't going to be able to change her. Because my mom was an addict, but she couldn't stop chasing the addicts. She couldn't stop trying to fix them, control them. She didn't know these tools that we are given in here, how to detach. She didn't know how to have boundaries. And, you know, it talks about in the, how Al-Anon works, it talks about boundaries and how we confuse love and caring, you know, with, we think we're loving them. We think we're caring about the addicts, by trying to control them and change them and fix them. And for me, it wasn't that way. You know, I have many family members. My little brother is an addict as well. And I used to think if I shamed him and if I told him, you know, shamed him and said things to him to make him feel low, that maybe he would get this. And it doesn't work that way. What I had to do is I had to let go of expectations on the addicts in my life, and I had to let go of expectations with my mother. I had these expectations, like I needed them to be a certain way so that I would be okay inside, because I don't want to feel pain. It's super selfish. Like I need my brother to get sober so my mom will stop trying to control him so that I can have a mom back. Right? Like, so I don't have to experience pain. Like, yes, I want them to be sober because I want them to live, but why do I want them to live so I don't have to experience the pain of losing them? And I forget that there's a God out there that's bigger. Jessica's always said God is bigger. She tells me God is bigger. And I have to remember that, because because I know the steps, because I've worked the steps, I feel like if they just know what I know, they'll be okay. And that's not how it works, you know? I got to go through my steps and I got to share my all those things with Jessica. And then I also got to look at my side. My side was not pretty at all. All of the things that I judged my father for, I had those same characteristics, those same defects of character. I judged my father. I was unloving to him. I was hurtful. And I got to see my part in my relationship with my father when I went through the steps. I got to see what was my part in having a father who was abusive to my mom, who abandoned us, who I felt chose to be this way. Like, what was my part in that? And I did have a part. You know, I had a part in not just loving him. And I would shame him and I would say things that I didn't mean. And when I went through my steps, I was able to find my part in those things, which ended up leading me to make an amends to my father. And, you know, I had my grandfather was dying. And so I flew out to Ohio and I had the opportunity of making amends to my father, something I never thought I would do first. I thought that it was conditional. I thought he needed to make amends to me and then I would make amends to him and then everything would be great. And in this program, that's not how it works. We learn that we need to keep our side of the street clean. That's all that matters, is taking care of our side of the street, because we need that freedom. We need to be okay. And if we're trying to fix them, which are never, it's never going to work, it's just this vicious cycle. And so I got to go out and I got to tell my dad that I was wrong for the way I treated him. And that and it was hard doing these things. I was angry when I did it, but I was able to pray before and just really ask God to give me the strength to do it. And I was able to let him know that I was wrong for the way I treated him. And before I did it, I was angry. And as I was doing it, this compassion, love just surrounded me for him at that moment, in that very moment of saying those things to him, of saying, I was wrong for how I treated you. You didn't deserve to be treated that way. Like, I love you. I know you did the best you could. I was able to find my part, and I was able to look him in the eyes and tell him that I love him and that I need him in my life. And, you know, when I looked him in the eyes, I meant it. It wasn't just this, what the world tells me, you need to love your parents, you know. I truly, at that moment, felt love and compassion, and I was able to see him for the first time as this broken child who had a really hard life, who ended up discovering alcohol and drugs and was never able to be released from those chains. And, you know, I didn't know at the time that I was making amends to him. You know, I got to the next 2 years, it was beautiful because I was able to, I can't think right now. I was able to, every time he would call, even if he was drunk and I answered the phone, I was able to be like, hi, Dad. And I was able to be present and just like not be judging him on the other line, like rolling my eyes. I think there was one time with Kelly, I rolled my eyes because it was like the third time in a row and he was on pills. And he would call me and be like, hi, I am high. And I'm like, I know, you just had surgery. And, you know, I was able to laugh and I was able to love him from this space that I never thought I could. I thought I'd always be angry that he drank. I thought the only way we would have a relationship is if he stopped. I thought he had to stop. I had these expectations like, you will become this type of man or I will not be your daughter or I will not show up for you. I will not respect you. I will not love you the way that you deserve to be loved. And, you know, that moment when I was able to find my part and I was able to make amends to him is when I was when that changed, and I was able to have this, like, the next year was beautiful, and, you know, it was 2 years ago, I got a call, from my father, and, he was crying, and he said, Kel, you know, I need to tell you, I was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and they're telling me that I have 6 to 12 months to live. And I remember just thinking, okay, is he making this up? Because he used to say things all the time about, like, oh, I'm sick or I'm this. And he said, you know, they're telling me I have 6 to 12 months. And I remember thinking, no, that's there's no way, you know. And I went and talked to my sponsor, and she was like, you need to go out and see him, like, right away. Because I thought I had a little bit of time. And I was like, I can't get out there to see him. You know, he's in Ohio. To get a ticket in the next 3 days is going to be crazy expensive. And my sponsor hands me a card the next day. And in the card, it says, I want to send you to see your dad. And she said, you need to go now. So I went. And I got out there, and when I got there, he was pretty much out of it. He could barely talk. He was so sedated. He was in so much pain that he just was laying there, and I was just, you know, with him. And at this time, I'm a student as well, so I'm trying to keep up with school and be there for my dad. And I have the... The next 2 days, the following day, they move him to hospice. And that day they put in a port. They put in a port because he wanted to do chemo because he wanted to fight it. They knew there was no point, but they did it anyways for him. And I remember when I leaned over and gave him a hug, I touched it on accident, and he was like, ow, and he always would do that whenever he's in the hospital. If I touched him, he would joke and be like, just kidding, and I thought he was kidding, and he wasn't. I, like, totally hurt him, and that was just really funny, then he was like, you know, he would, like, yell, and then he was, like, out of it again. I'm like, okay. The next day, though, my dad was up and awake, and I'm like, this is really weird. I didn't know, but it would have been, he was having the two days that you have before you pass. And, you know, at that moment, what came to me is I need to Skype my little brother and sister. And I knew I needed to do it right then. And I had my laptop with me because I was a student. Thank God I was a student. Because I don't know. I just knew I needed to Skype them. So I got my brother and sister on the computer, and I let them say hi to my dad, and he got to say hi to them. And then my husband was like, I owed your dad some money. And he's like, go buy him the biggest lobster you can find, because my dad loves seafood. So I went and I did that. And my dad hadn't ate in weeks, and he ate. And I got to watch him just, like, chow down on this huge lobster. And, the next day we got to go to his grandson's baptism, and my dad was like, he kept asking me to sneak in marijuana for him. And I'm like, I'm not bringing it into a hospital, Dad. He's like, just give me a little bit. And I'm like, Ohio, I don't, you know, so what? And so we go to leave to this baptism at the Mormon church. And he's like, stop by my friend's house. And I'm like, what? Okay, Dad. So I stopped by his friend's house from high school, and I'm like, my dad said, you got some dope. And he's like, yeah. So he gives me a baggie, and I'm like, okay. And I'm like, Dad, do you have something to hit it? He's like, yeah. And he gives me this one hitter, and his wife is driving, and he's like, well, break it up for me. And I'm like, okay. So I'm like breaking up this, you know, weed in the back of the car, and I'm pushing it into a one hitter for him, and I'm like, okay. And I'm handing it up to him, and he's like hitting it, trying to hit it before we get to the baptism. And you know, I'm so grateful for that memory. I didn't get to smoke it with him, but I got to watch him smoke it. And I got to it made him be able to eat. And so then he's like, let's go to Red Lobster. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, we went there, and then he's like, I need a Long Island. And my dad's an alcoholic. And I'm like, of course you do. So his wife's like, no. And I'm like, let him have two. Let him have three. Just give him to me. I told the waiter, I'm like, keep bringing him. And, you know, that was the last memory that I have with my dad, because the next day he would fall back into whatever it is. He wasn't aware. He was out of it again. And I would leave 3 days later, or 2 days later, And the day before I left, he couldn't get out of bed, and I was trying to help him get out of bed to go to the bathroom, and his legs were so swollen. His ankles were so swollen, and they wanted to put a catheter. He's like, no, I'm going to the bathroom. I'm like, okay, so I'm helping my dad into this bathroom and helping him, you know, stand there holding onto his arm while he goes to the bathroom. And I didn't want to go to sleep that night because I knew I had to go home in the morning. I knew I had to fly home. And I knew it was going to be the last time I saw him. And walking out of that hospital was the hardest thing for me because I knew I went back twice. And I was like, okay, I got to go. Because I knew that would be the last time that I would see him. And 2 days later, I got a call. And they said, you need to come back. He's not doing good. And I was like, okay, let me see. And then as soon as I hung the phone up, it rang again, and it was my stepmom. And just that morning, she had put the phone by his ear and said, Kelly, will you tell him it's time to go? And I said, yeah, I'll let him know. And I was born on my dad's birthday. I was a daddy's girl. And they put the phone by his ear, and I told him that morning, Dad, it's okay. You can let go. And when I got that second call, not even 5 seconds after the nurse at the station called me to come back out, my stepmom said, your dad just passed. And I'm so grateful that there was a program I could go to that I thought I was going to be able to teach me how to deal with the alcoholics, to deal with them. I didn't know that these tools were going to teach me how to love them, how to show up for them, how to forgive them. And it did. It gave me the ability to see my dad in a different light that I could not see him in because I was so angry and so broken inside. And I was so mad. And this program gave me the ability to show up for him as a daughter. And, you know, my little brother and sister couldn't make it. But I was able to allow them to see him and talk to him. And my dad, you know, these rooms gave me that. They gave me that. I know that I wouldn't have been able to forgive him on my own. And there were tools in here and steps that allowed me to uncover and discover and discard stuff. Because I had so much that I was holding on to. You know, and they taught me that I didn't cause this, I can't cure it, and I can't control it. And that was thank God I was taught those things. Because if I would have still been trying to do those things, I would have missed out on the most beautiful experience that I could have had with my father. You know, the way God placed Jessica in my life. You know, she just came here, showed up, shared her experience, strength, and hope. And I didn't know that would ripple effect, that would go on to change me, change my heart, allow me to have these relationships, and not only that, be able to show my family members how you can love others, that even if we're sick, even if they're sick, that they can still. I learned that it wasn't my fault that my dad was the way he was, and I learned that I can't cure him. And I learned that I could not control it. But I did learn is that I could have boundaries. And I could have healthy boundaries. You know, when I went out and saw him, I didn't have to let him watch my son. I didn't have to do those certain things with him when I went out to visit him the first time. But those were my boundaries. But as far as like answering the phone when he called, drunk, like I was able to answer it. You know, I was able to detach from him physically. Or I'm sorry, spiritually and mentally, but not physically. Because when we are taught in here to detach, when I first heard detach, I thought that meant like I need them out of my life if I want to be okay. And that's not the case. It just means that I need to be able to put myself first and take care of me first. And this program taught me how to be able to do that. It taught me to how I can still have them, these addicts in my life, because I don't want them out of my life. Because the whole reason I want them to get sober is so that they stay in my life. Because I don't want to lose them because I love them. And so when I learned how to detach with love, I was able to still let go of the idea that I need these expectations of them. I need them to be a certain way for me to be okay. That's putting giving them a lot of power to control my happiness. And I learned how to be able to hand that over to God. And the whole slogan, live and let live, you know, I learned how to live in here by letting them live, by letting them have their journeys. It's hard to let go. Melissa had almost 9 years, she had 9 years sober at one time, right? And went back out and then struggled for the next 4. And you let them go in the sense of, okay, this is their journey. And then things happen where they die and you lose them. But the beautiful thing is that we get this program that allows us to love them, to be able to show up for them, to be able to answer the phone when they call. And sometimes I couldn't answer the phone. Sometimes I didn't when my dad called. And looking back, I'm like, I wish I could have, but I know that it was okay. You know, I forgive myself for that. You know, the steps in this program allowed me to be able to get close to God, and it allowed me to let go of a lot of hurts and a lot of pains. And I was able to find my part in a lot of things and be able to, this program has restored relationships for me. And all it was is me connecting to something greater, me connecting to my higher power. And it means that I have to do that on a daily basis because I still have addicts and alcoholics in my life. I had the beautiful opportunity of being able to take care of my cousin's son for 3 months, and he was 6 months old when he came to live with us. And I remember being at times angry at first that she was still using while I'm raising her child. And then my husband would remind me every time, like, we're not doing this for her. This is for that baby. And thank goodness, like, this room gave me the tools to be able to be compassionate and loving towards her and to be able to see her the way that God sees her. You know, I don't know where I would be without Kohanon and Al-Anon. I'm never gonna not need this room, this program, these women and men that are a part of it. I will never not need them in my life. I need them every single Thursday, even though I haven't been able to make it a lot because of my daughter's gymnastics. I need them to show up to that meeting every Thursday at Off the Roller Coaster. I need them to show up there. I do. I need them to show up because I need them to share their experience, strength, and hope with me, because there's times like today where we have to bury people that we love. Because this disease takes a lot of people. And I need somewhere that I can go where I can hear that it's going to be okay and that God has me and he's going to carry me through this. And that I can keep going. Because I have to show up. I need to show up as a mother today. I get to show up as a mother today. You know, there's so many women in here I keep looking at that, and men, that have touched my life in a way that I can never thank them enough, ever. You guys carried me through losing my father. You guys have carried me through a lot. You know, I'm glad that you don't just go to Kohanon and get better. I'm glad that it's a constant. We start our steps over and over again. Because I need you in that room. I need you to keep showing up. Because today I lost someone today I went and said goodbye to someone that I love very dearly. But it's not going to be the last time. It won't. And I have to remember that. If you haven't done your steps, if you don't have a sponsor, if you haven't been to an Al-Anon or Kohanon meeting, go to one, go to 20. They're all different. They're all different. But there are people there who will become your family. When you have a mom that can't show up for you because she's so sick because of her alcoholic and her addicts, you'll have someone there that will show up for you and that will be able to be that for you so that you can still love your mom, so that you don't have to be angry at them. I'm grateful for my life today. I'm grateful that my husband has almost 7 years sober. I'm grateful that my kids have two parents that get to show up for them today, and I'm thankful that someone carried this message. And with that, I will pass.